Today, we are joined by Barbara Smith, author and independent scholar who has been active in the movement for social, racial, and economic justice since the 1960s. She is here today to talk post-elections. Barbara Smith, welcome back to the Hudson Mohawk magazine.
Thank you so much.
So you wrote an op-ed for the Boston Globe called What Joe Biden Should Say About White Supremacy. And in a creative way, you wrote the kind of speech that you would hope he might be able to give in his first weeks as president. So I was hoping you could start off by reading the words you could imagine or in a fantasy world see coming out of President-elect Joe Biden's mouth.
Of course. So this is not the very beginning of the op-ed, but it's a section that I think will tell everyone who is listening the flavor of what I was trying to do in the op-ed. So he begins by talking about why he decided to run for office, and it is widely known that he decided to run for president because of what happened in Charlottesville in 2017. And then he says, in recent weeks, however, I have become aware that the situation of racial injustice that the nation faces is even more urgent and complex than I had previously believed. I now understand that what we face is not merely racial discrimination or even systemic racism, but institutionalized white supremacy. I know that some folks may not like the term systemic white supremacy because they see it as an attack on white people. I wondered about that too, but I found out that it does not primarily refer to individual attitudes or behaviors, but to a powerful, entrenched system that consistently disadvantages people of color and privileges whites. When we talk about racism, we usually focus on race relations, how different kinds of people do or do not get along. Challenging individual bigotry is critical, but we have a much larger task. We need to look at the impact of systemic white supremacy on all aspects of American life. It is time to stop playing around the edges of this problem and to fix it. Here are some of the actions my administration will take in the first 100 days. I will appoint a racial justice czar who will oversee all governmental actions to address systemic white supremacy. I will engage in open dialogue with leaders who call for defunding or abolishing the police to better understand their recommendations for transforming our criminal justice system. My administration will explore initiating a truth and reconciliation process in consultation with countries such as Germany, South Africa, and Rwanda. And it goes on like that.
So much comes to mind when hearing you read the speech that you made up that President-elect Joe Biden could give on his first week in office. I'm wondering what motivated you to write this op-ed in this way?
My editor at the Boston Globe, and I love saying my editor at the Boston Globe because we did not know each other until I wrote my first op-ed for the Boston Globe back in June, which is titled, The Problem is White Supremacy. She contacted me the week before the election, and she asked if I would write an op-ed about white supremacy. She specifically said, could you write about white supremacy in relationship to the election for our post-election coverage? And if Joe Biden wins, what should he do? And then the other possibility was, if the other one wins, and I don't call his name, if the other one wins, will that embolden white supremacists? And so I, you know, was emailing back and forth with her. I said, well, you know, that's actually two articles that you're asking me possibly to write. I said, well, I'm only going to write one. I'm going to write the one with the better outcome, which is to have that creature removed, although, of course, he's in deep denial and creating chaos and death as a result of not allowing the process, the basic processes of a transition to go forward. But anyway, I decided not to waste any time writing about him and that. And I thought, if the worst happens, I can just rage write. You know, I can rage write something, or either decide not to write anything at all. So I wrote what I've already begun to share and that we're talking about with this op-ed, this fictionalized speech. Originally, I thought, let me write a letter to Biden. That's how I started out. And then not very far into it, a day or two into it, and I had very little time for me because I am not a quick writer. But in any event, I thought not long after I'd started, I said, what about writing a speech for him? And I just loved the idea because that's a very powerful thing to do, to put words into someone's mouth.
Some of these recommendations here touch us closer to home as well. We just had this series, The Time for Reckoning, where different city officials in Troy, Schenectady, and Albany got together, and then community members got together and responded. And here in Troy, we heard Chief Brian Owen say that within the Troy Police Department, he does not believe we have racism. And he also said that systemic racism does not exist within Troy's police department. I wonder what your thoughts are in terms of how, you know, we start to, as you say, name, confront, and end white supremacy. Is
there's always like more than one goal that I have in writing what is now a series of articles about white supremacy. And I'm not saying I'm going to write another one, but there are now three. One of my goals for this one, as with the others, is to enlighten people and to inform them about how white supremacy functions. So besides the kind of in-your-face tactic of writing a speech for this most powerful person on earth, I also had the goal of, let's have an explanation yet again of how white supremacy functions so people can get that out of the article too. And I do want to comment on this incredibly fake news concept of there being no racism in the Troy Police Department and no systemic racism, et cetera. It's not about the Troy Police Department, although that is something that we need to be gravely concerned about. To say that there's no racism in an American institution is to be talking nonsense. That's the point that I'm trying to make and have been trying to make ever since the late spring, which is that, as Trevor Noah said so cleverly, he said racism in our society is like corn syrup. It's in everything. And I completely agree. And that's exactly what I've been trying to convey. It is really, to me, unethical to be putting out that perspective when those of us who are the target of this oppression know absolutely without question that we are the victims and the survivors of the reality of systemic racism. It is so disrespectful to us and to our experience. Theminin, I mean, please, you know, let's just be real. But obviously, people don't like to be real when it comes to our race in the United States.
I wondered if you would revisit one of these recommendations. You say that President-elect Biden will engage in open dialogue with leaders who call for defunding and abolishing the police.
This is just, you know, this is a fictionalized speech. It's not a real speech. It's not a real set of policies. Just like my Hamer Baker plan is not a real plan. There are people who've asked me about how it would be implemented. I said, you realize that, you know, I'm an English professor, who has served two terms and elected office as a common council member in Albany. So I do understand how some of the sausage is made, but I'm not the person who on a federal level could begin to do all the nuts and bolts of a Marshall Plan to eradicate white supremacy. But I am the person who suggests that that would be the right course of action. But in any event, around the defunding the recommendation, as I said, my favorite about defunding or abolishing the police, that's really, I think, one of the most pointed of the several recommendations that I have him state, because of course, they have, he and other people who share that political stance, they have just vilified the concept of even entertaining the possibility of defunding the police or abolishing the police without ever looking at, so why are these people saying this? What are they talking about? What does it mean? Another thing that I wrote in a note that didn't get into the article that I'll say right now, I don't see defunding the police as being any more radical than demolishing Jim Crow segregation in the 20th century or any more radical than abolishing chattel slavery in the 19th century. It's the 21st century. This is on a continuum of Black and other people fighting for our rights and for our freedom. So instead of dismissing it out of hand, find out what people mean by it. The major thing they mean about defunding is like put some of those millions and billions of dollars into our hurting, deprived, under-resourced communities and deal with the social implications and the social causes for crime and problems as opposed to just punishment, punishment, punishment.
As you write an op-ed like this, as you write this, you know, fictitious speech for President-elect Biden, what do you hope a reader takes away from this in their own life, in their own activism, in their own work?
What I want readers to take away from this piece and from others that I've written like over a lifetime is that much is possible if we envision it and if we put our energy, our collective energy, into making it so. It's like kind of writing to inspire. It's writing to inform, absolutely to inform. His speech does a good, short, and concise description of what white supremacy is and how it functions. But it's also to say, yeah, we could have that. Why don't we have that? Let's have that. How do we get there? And the op-ed ends with me talking about what I always talk about, which is that it's the people on the ground doing the work and the organizing. Those are the people who make these visions real. You know, more fight, more energy, more really smart strategies, because it's really important to be strategic.
Excellent. Barbara Smith, always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you for joining us today on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you so much.